Welcome to Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today is Jim Bovard. He's the author of a new book called Attention Deficit Democracy. He's also the author of Lost Rights and numerous other books. Our subject today is going to be, what is democracy? What is happening to America? And what can we do to save the country? Let me just start by reading a few comments from Jim's book, and I think you'll have a better grasp of where we're going to go today. Many Americans no longer value freedom enough to make any effort to understand government or political action. If people choose not to think, then they have chosen to submit. If people choose to make no effort to understand the machinations of government, then they have chosen to be political victims. If people choose to disregard past lies and abuses, they choose to sacrifice themselves to the next liar and abuser. Jim, just one more little comment that you have here in the book, and then we'll get started. I think this really sums up what's been going on for the last 50 years, I suppose. You say liberty has been at the wrong end of the shooting gallery for decades, and the political assaults have been intensified during the past two presidencies. So with that, Jim, tell us what's on your mind with this book, Attention Deficit Democracy.
Aaron, thanks for having me on the program. I really appreciate this. With Attention Deficit Democracy, I'm trying to wake up people to how the combination of mass ignorance, fear-mongering by the government, and lying politicians is putting our entire system of government into a death spiral. There's been so much power concentrated, there is no leash on that power anymore, and it is Americans face the situation. This power is gaining momentum with each passing year, with each presidency.
Let's go through some of the abuses of power that you see and perhaps some ways to get our power back. As they say, power to the people.
Okay. Something that you and JPFO have done a lot on is the need for a Bill of Rights culture in this country. And it's unfortunate that Americans are no longer aware of what the Constitution says and what their rights are. And because of that, they're often very passive about what happens when the government violates those rights. This has become clear with property rights. The government's been permitted to confiscate private property left and right on the shakiest of pretenses, and it's happening as well with these with the recent controversy about government warrantless wiretaps of Americans here in the U.S. The Bush administration pretends that the Fourth Amendment doesn't say anything about probable cause or a warrant. Instead, as long as some government official thinks it's reasonable, then the government's entitled to invade your privacy. And that's the kind of rewriting of the Bill of Rights, which poses a grave peril to Americans.
Do you think most politicians are aware of the Bill of Rights? And I'm not trying to be flippant. Do you think they actually learned about them while they were in school?
They might have learned about it in government schools, but, I mean, it's one of the great tragedies of the U.S. that most people learn most of what they know about the government from the government. And if that's not a, self-evident conflict of interest, I don't know what is. Some politicians are aware of the Bill of Rights. It seems that the opposition party is far more likely to invoke it, to wave it in the air. This is what we saw from a lot of Republicans during the Clinton administration, and we're seeing the same from Democrats under Bush. And some of the folks on both sides might be sincere, but it does seem as if it's only the opposition that cares about the Bill of Rights most of the time.
Well, so it seems. You've written that lies have been the key factor in the expansion of government. How has government become so dishonest, and why are Americans so blasé regarding the lies that our rulers tell us?
Americans have forgotten that politicians are dangerous, that politicians as a class are dangerous, that people who are seeking power over us are not by definition our friends. And yet, if you look at some of the recent history as far as the lies that politicians have gotten away with, from Lyndon Johnson lying about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, to Nixon lying about the secret bombing of Cambodia, to Jimmy Carter lying about the Shah of Iran being a progressive enlightened ruler, to George H.W. Bush lying about the justifications for the first Gulf War, to Clinton lying about Kosovo and the bombing of Belgrade. Entire generations of Americans have come of age since the ancient time when a president's power was constrained by a duty of candor to the American people.
There's a number of comments you have in your book that I find fascinating. Let me just go through a list that we put together. You say, rather than a democracy, we increasingly have an elective dictatorship. People are merely permitted to choose who will violate the laws and the Constitution.
This is the case when if the president is permitted to be above the law, then we no longer have a republic. We no longer have rule of law, and any notion of equality before the law is lost when the president is above the law. And yeah, that's what's been happening in this country. That's what's been expanding president after president. And most people either don't recognize it or don't care.
Well, on that note, I have a question for you. If we continue along the current path where people don't know or don't care, what would you guess will be the future of this country in a year, 5 years, 10 years from now?
People would have even less free speech. People would have less privacy from the government. People would have less security against government intrusions. It would be easier for government to confiscate people's land, to confiscate people's bank accounts, to pilfer their email, and who knows how many foreign wars might be started. Who knows how many other camps like Guantanamo might be set up in other places around the world or here in the U.S.
That's scary. You also mentioned that Washington policy debates are often like a criminal trial in which all the evidence of the defendant's past offense is ruled inadmissible.
You know, it's interesting seeing how the media and the political parties argue issues in D.C., because on so many areas, there is a long history of government failure and of politicians lying. And yet, with each new expansion of government power or each new foreign intrusion, it is as if we are obliged to assume that the government is honest and competent. It is as if we are obliged to assume that the government is only doing what it says it's doing. One example, Bush, talking about these National Security Agency warrantless wiretaps, Bush has said, well, it was only people linked to Al-Qaeda. Well, you know, it's fascinating to me that so many people would actually assume that's the case, because Bush's comments on the Patriot Act, Bush's comments on a lot of other aspects of the war on terrorism have been shown to be false. And yet, here's a case where the president is openly stating and practically bragging that he's ignoring the U.S. Constitution, and we're supposed to assume that he's only doing it for good.
Well, following up on that, you use a term, the battered citizen syndrome. You say the more debacles government produces, the more voters cling to faith in their rulers. I think that's worth talking about.
Yeah, it's interesting how the federal government is exploiting public fear to redefine the relationship between the rulers and the American people. White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, he was given a talk at the GOP convention in September 2004. He praised George Bush's role as protector of the nation, and he assured the GOP delegates that this president sees America as we think about a 10-year-old child. I know as a parent I would sacrifice all for my children. Now, it's hard to imagine a more condescending comment. I mean, this is even more condescending than the stuff we heard from the Bill Clinton administration. And yet, this generated almost no controversy. Part of the reason that the government fear-mongering is succeeding is because so many people are so ignorant that it's easier for government to frighten people into submission. There were all these warnings about terror attacks the Bush administration issued during the 2004 campaign. Even Homeland Security Czar Tom Ridge later said that he thought a lot of those warnings were not justified. But there was a study done at Cornell. It showed that each time the federal government issued a new warning of a terrorist threat after 9/11, the president's approval rating rose by an average of almost 3%. And as long as enough people can be frightened, then all people can be rolled. That's how it works in a democratic system, and mass fear becomes the ticket to destroy rights across the board.
We're talking with Jim Bovard. His book is Attention Deficit Democracy. Jim, if you had a chance to help people understand the pitfalls of democracy, as the term is used in America, what would you like to tell people?
Well, you know, there are a lot of benefits to representative government, and it's far better than any type of dictatorial system, and it's far better than a one-man rule situation. The vision the Founding Fathers had of rule of law and equality before the law and no one above the law, that is a very viable vision. But if instead of that we have quasi-mob rule, if we have simply politicians stampeding voters during campaigns, if an election is simply a one-day snapshot of transient mass delusions, then this is not a very noble form of government. If so many Americans are looking for the government to save them, then it's hard to have a dignified search for a shepherd in chief.
Shepherd in chief, that's an interesting phrase.
Well, that seems, you know, I mean, this is something which we also saw during the Clinton administration. That was something which Clinton exploited very effectively, this whole notion of feeling your pain and promising to protect you against every possible threat and danger and all that stuff. And a lot of people liked that, and a lot of people fell for it. But that doesn't mean that the government's going to keep its side of the bargain no matter what politicians promise.
I'm going to read another comment from your book. It's also on page 251. You say, it is unclear whether liberty can be revived in America. It is unclear how many Americans still give a damn about freedom, still give a damn about the chance to carve out their own lives according to their own values. It is unclear how many people would suffer any inconvenience or notoriety for voicing or supporting unpopular views. It is unclear how many Americans have the courage to decry government's abuses that the majority tolerates or applauds. Let's break this paragraph down and go through this point by point, if you don't mind. Let's deal with, well, about how many Americans care about freedom.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's hard to know how many people do, but, given that the people are so docile towards the rulers, nowadays very few Americans show the passion for freedom that our forefathers had. For instance, think about how many young people and college students would happily permit the government to monitor all their email in return for a promise of unlimited free music downloads. How many Walmart gift certificates would it take for a typical citizen to agree to forfeit all his Fourth Amendment rights and entitle the government to search his car, house, and himself any time that they chose? How many McDonald's gift certificates would it take to sway a lot of Americans to pledge to never publicly criticize the U.S. president? I don't know the exact numbers on these, and perhaps some of the people who would agree to that would change their mind afterwards, but people seem to forget, you know, people have forgotten that that power is dangerous, and especially coercive power, and power to power to destroy your rights, power to lock you away, either on false charges or no charges at all, power to suppress you. It's amazing to think that after all that's happened in this country in the last few years, the last few decades, that so many people have this blind faith that government is our friend, and therefore we don't need protections against it.
Let me move on in the same paragraph. You say, give a damn about the chance to carve out their own lives according to their own values.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting to think of how many folks these days are willing to make any sacrifice to live differently, to live outside the mainstream, live in a way that's not the same way the vast majority of all their neighbors or others are living. I mean, I think of Henry David Thoreau. I mean, there was that kind of a very healthy go-to-hell attitude that he had. You know, he was going to go off and live by his pond, and, you know, if folks wanted to come and talk to him, he would do them the honor of speaking to them usually. He wanted to be on his own, and that's always been one of the greatest parts of the American spirit. And you don't have to move out to the hills or to a lake to do that. You can, you know, it can be a mindset in you, but I don't know if we're losing that in this country. And if we are losing that, then people are going to be less aware of the reason why they need to have to at least have the option to live as they choose. I mean, it doesn't mean that folks need to force themselves to live in a way that's going to scandalize their neighbors or the whoever, but just to have that right in reserve, that's vital.
We talk about or you talk about how many people would suffer any inconvenience, notoriety for voicing or supporting unpopular views. Political correctness, I suppose, is the big enemy, but perhaps you'd like to talk about this.
Yeah, you know, this is something, again, I'm sure that JPFO has seen a lot of this from people who might privately tell you that they're in favor of the Second Amendment or that they're in favor of a right to people have the right to possess firearms, but they wouldn't say that in public, and they would not want to have a small decal on their front door in favor of the Second Amendment because, well, you know, who knows what the neighbors would say. Part of that fear and onus has been orchestrated by the government with their free speech zones that have been that the Bush administration has put up in many places where the president has gone to speak. The Secret Service will go someplace ahead of the president's arrival and pressure the local police to set up zones where demonstrators are quarantined. Sometimes these are a quarter, a half, or a mile away from where the president is going to be speaking or passing through. There's been a concerted effort to keep protesters, to quarantine them from the media at the GOP convention in New York in September 2004. There were mass illegal arrests. The New York Police Department would simply come in and throw giant nets over large groups of people, many of whom were innocent tourists, and drag them all in and arrest them. And the NYPD also chose to ignore your judge's order to either charge people or release them within 24 or 48 hours, I've forgotten which. The government there was completely lawless, but it was very few people cared. And many people might say, well, you know, it was just a bunch of anti-Bush demonstrators, but next time it might be a bunch of anti-Hillary Clinton demonstrators, or it might be a bunch of anti-Charles Schumer demonstrators. And at some point, it's been surprising to me that so few conservatives have voiced concern over the precedents that are being set in favor of suppression by this so-called conservative administration.
That's an interesting point. You said it's unclear how many Americans have the courage to decry government abuses that the majority tolerates or applauds. What has happened to the people of this country that they would tolerate or applaud abuses, violations of the Bill of Rights?
Several different things.
Is it something in the water? I mean, what's happening? What's happening to people in
fluoride.
This country?
It has been surprising, especially in the last few years, how easy it's been for the Bush administration to nullify rights. I was also surprised at how easy it was for the Clinton administration to demagogue against the rights of gun owners, for instance, I was amazed at how easy it was for the Clinton administration to basically cover what they did at Waco in a fog of lies and avoid any responsibility for it. As far as the type of abuses that people tolerate or applaud, Bush's power to label people as enemy combatants. Many people think, well, this is a necessary power because, you know, these folks were out to get us. But there was a federal exchange in federal court in late 2004. Federal Judge Joyce Hens Greene was asking a U.S. attorney, one of the top people in the Justice Department, a hypothetical. Say, for instance, there was a little old lady in Switzerland who sent a donation to an orphanage in Afghanistan, and unbeknownst to her, some of that money got passed on to Al-Qaeda. Could that little old lady be classified as an enemy combatant? And according to the Bush administration lawyer, he said, sure, she can be classified as an enemy combatant, and thereby the Bush administration would have a right to confine her to a Guantanamo, for instance. You know, it makes sense to have a vigorous system to protect America against, especially Al-Qaeda, a foreign group that has attacked us viciously in the past and killed thousands of Americans. But there is no reason that this has to be lawless. And with the way that Bush administration has structured it, it has been lawless. It's based on the president's edict, this stuff on enemy combatants. The Bush administration has fought like a tiger to avoid having to produce any evidence to a judge to show why someone is locked up in perpetuity. Another example of that is the torture scandal. You know, it's amazing to flash back to those simple times 4.5 years ago. Who would have thought that the U.S. would have an attorney general who was perhaps best known for his advocacy of torture? And yet that's what we have now with Gonzales. Ashcroft also played along with that enthusiastically. And there have been some rulings from the Bush administration on this. They have insisted that they have the right to use evidence gained via torture in their judicial proceedings on people accused of being enemy combatants. I mean, this is basically turning the clock back to about 1307. The whole idea of using coerced confessions, I mean, here again, looking back 4 or 5 years ago, Who would have expected this from the American system of government? And there is a downward speed here. Who knows where it's going to go next?
Scary. That's something else you mention in your book. As long as rulers are above the law, citizens have the same type of freedom that slaves had on days when their masters chose not to beat them. How does that apply to America today?
Say, for instance, there is a de facto ruling that FBI agents are not bound by the law. And if an FBI agent shoots and kills an innocent American, then the FBI agent faces no penalty. This has happened in a number of cases. The most prominent was Ruby Ridge out in Idaho, where the Clinton Justice Department fought tooth and nail to basically claim sovereign immunity to block the state prosecution of the FBI sniper that killed a mother holding a baby in the cabin doorway. But there have been a lot of other cases where other federal agents, DEA agents or other armed federal agents, have abused their rights and sometimes shot and sometimes killed Americans. And these folks are almost never held liable. And if these folks have a de facto right to shoot or wound or maim Americans and don't face the same type of penalty that you or I would face, then they are a legally superior class. We are their inferiors, and we are in danger every time they are around.
We're talking with Jim Bovard. His book is Attention Deficit Democracy. Well, we have all these problems, and they're serious problems. They're probably going to destroy the country, probably get worse before it gets better. But when we have to clean up the mess, when we finally get back to bringing in a Bill of Rights culture, bringing America back to America, what do you think we're going to have to do? What are we going to have to do to bring back or to have a country that's worth living in?
Well, one of the first things is to restore the rule of law, to place the government back under the cage of law. Another thing is to stop falling for the myth of democracy, the myth that democracy somehow automatically protects people. It doesn't matter how much power the government seizes. Basically recognize that force is the essence of government. And that doesn't mean that we have to abolish government, but that's a reason to minimize government, because otherwise we'll end up maximizing coercion. And the more expansive government is, the more perils people face in daily lives, be it from IRS agents or from child support services or from other agencies that are often have little or no legal restraints on their power. Americans have to recover enough self-respect to become intolerant of official lies. People are so docile right now, it is almost as if good government means when the politicians lie to us for our own good, for the public good, and bad government is when politicians lie for their own selfish interests. And how is it possible to tell the two apart? You have to trust the politicians that tell you which is which. This is the standard, what this country is becoming. It's important to recognize in politics, positive thinking is often the slave's virtue, something people do to con themselves about the burdens and chains being placed upon them.
Well, just so people don't think that you're serious all the time,
okay.
I have one final question to ask of you. In your notes here, you say, what brand of beer should Americans drink to kill the political pain?
Well, you know, personally, I've always been biased in favor of Pilsner. Or some good solid lager, you know. I mean, I have to wonder, you know, things have really gotten worse in this country as more people start drinking light beer.
That's a good note to end on. Jim, I want to thank you very much for being on Talking to America. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today has been Jim Bovard, talking about his new book, Attention Deficit Democracy. Please remember that if you don't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talkin' to America is a production of JPFO.org.